How about we talk some Pac-12 football and more? He's the analyst for the Pac-12 Network, the Elite 11 quarterback camp. See if you can keep up on Twitter, the handle at Yogi Roth, always repping the 570 in Factoryville, PA. Yogi Roth, how is life treating you during these most unique times?
Well, I appreciate the reference to the 570. That was, that gave me a good chuckle here. We're doing okay. You know, I always like to think of, you know, things that matter now, and people are going through real stuff, right? Whether you're talking about, you know, over 20 million people filing for unemployment, or the loss of life in our footprint here in the Pac-12, or where I'm from back on the East Coast, or around the world, right? I was just talking to a coach. And tell me about how, you know, people at a farm in Iowa, 1,000 people just got sick, you know. With that being, you know, front of mind, we're doing just fine. You know, like, we got a lot of preschool happening. We got a lot of bike rides with our 5-year-old. And, you know, I'm trying to become a gardener, but also stay connected, right? I mean, I've never worked, you know, probably with not as much time, but you still work at a high level with the draft, with our daily podcast, the Pac-12 Networks. I'm going to interview every head coach next week, so I'm knee-deep in preparing for that. So I'm definitely, you know, staying creative, I guess you would say, and staying connected as much as we can.
Yeah, you know, routine is important. You know, my first thing I do every morning is I walk my dogs, and I know you like to hit the surf. So with closures and restrictions, have you been able to kind of get out, do some surfing, and maintain some sense of normalcy?
You know, bro, I haven't. They closed the beaches here in L.A., and they've opened them in Orange County or Santa Barbara, but not here. And, you know, I probably could sneak out in the morning, you know, at sunrise, but it just doesn't feel like the example I want to set for our kid right now. So I'm hurting inside a little bit just because it is my soul. But as I stare at my surfboards right now, literally on our lawn, it's okay. There'll be more waves. I'll be just fine.
Yeah, I don't think the waves are going anywhere. So the NFL draft was a couple weeks back. I mean, the Pac-12 quarterbacks, the first one off the board, obviously, the Ducks' Justin Herbert, who goes to what is now your local team. And I saw you actually extended him a dinner invite. But when you think of his game transferring to the pros, you like where he landed? You like that situation with the Chargers?
I do. For somebody who is as high profile as him, it was a great scenario, right? Like, I think Jacob Eason landed in the best spot of any quarterback in the draft in terms of sit behind Philip Rivers. Sounds like he's going to play one more year and then be a high school head coach, at least according to social media this morning. And it's a great room to be in. And for Justin here in LA, I think the same thing. You know, Tyrod Taylor is not a Hall of Famer, but I've known him through the Elite 11. He's going to be a great guy to learn from. You know, that staff is stable. They've got guys like Rip Shear, who's been all over the Pac-12, and Gus Bradley, who's with the Seahawks, and, you know, the Jags, et cetera, and their head coach is so well-respected that it's just a healthy culture. And I think that's such a big thing for when you land in the league, especially as a quarterback based on a franchise. And I don't think he's going to be thrust to the Wolves, per se. And the Wolves in L.A., like, don't really care a ton about the Chargers football unless they're winning. So I think it's going to be a nice environment for him, to be honest with you. And he's a pro. I mean, you got to know him. He came back for an opportunity to win as a senior, but to really also develop as a human, as a leader, as an alpha, as a, you know, franchise quarterback. And I just think from last year to this year, he's so much more prepared because of what Coach Cristobal and company have done for him and with him.
Yeah, I was really happy for him. Talking with Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. I know, obviously, you're tight with the USC program. Last year, JT Daniels was the starter, got hurt. Kedon Slovis is in. And I know Daniels put his name in the portal, but his name's still on the roster. So what do we make of the quarterback situation down there?
Well, it's Keenan's job. You know, I think that's pretty clear. And I think when you look at the situation we're in now with COVID-19, of like unknown training camp, and hopefully when the season starts, it's probably going to be a truncated training camp. So here's JT, who is not healthy currently, wouldn't have been able to compete in spring ball in everything. He would have done like some of the throwing and stuff like that if that was there. And of course, he's talented in that regard, but wouldn't be able to do all the team stuff, right? And I just think that so much football is 11 on 11, no matter how many, you know, ways you want to cut it up and slice it up. So he looked at training camp and he was like, all right, am I really going to get the time to beat this guy out? Probably not. You know, and then at the time that he entered the portal, the one-year transfer rule, from all the coaches I talked to, they all thought it was going to happen. Because it basically happens anyway, guys. Put together, you know, a waiver request, a hardship request, and very rarely do you get denied, which is a big reason why the rule came up in the first place. They're like, yeah, let's just make it a rule instead of having to go through this on a singular basis. But the fact that it got paused, I think, is a reason why he hasn't made a decision to go anywhere. Because being the backup quarterback in L.A., when you're a snap away from being the dude again, as well as finish, you know, completing these more credits toward your degree, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it for JT, and the uncertainty of if there's even going to be a season, I think, is something that he's just kind of waiting on. So not surprised that he has him on the roster. Clay has had multiple players enter the portal and come back, you know, which is, you know, a lot of coaches have differing philosophies on that, but his is always right. Just wait it out. Go see what's up, and if you want to come back, we got a spot for you.
A year ago, Gardner Minshew got drafted late and ended up starting for Jacksonville. The Cougs had Anthony Gordon run that offense and put up huge numbers. You saw him play a couple times, Arizona State, Stanford. What do you like about his game, how it might transfer to playing Sundays?
You know, I'm just excited for him to go to Seattle. You know, I think about his first team meeting was with Pete Carroll and then got Zoom bombed by Will Ferrell. Like, just imagine that for a minute. You know, like, and I know Pete obviously really well. There's no one I have more admiration for in the game than him. So I think for Anthony, he's going into a scenario with a team that's really struggled finding backup quarterbacks, right? For obvious reasons, because of their starter. You know, who that is. So you look at the list of backups that they've had, like, you know, it makes perfect sense that Anthony Gordon would have a chance to do it. So I'm bummed for him that there's no rookie minicamps, there's no OTAs. You know, his verbiage is going to change, like his world upside down in terms of what he played in versus what he's going to play in. But he's a smart guy, so I'm excited for his opportunity to learn there, grow there. And he's a gamer, and I know Pete loves guys that are gamers. He always says in the draft, and he said it with Steve Kerr, on his podcast a couple weeks ago after the draft, of like, at the end of the day, you want the guy you're going to pick when you're in the park. And Anthony Gordon is the guy I would pick if I was playing in the park to be my quarterback a lot of the time. So I'm excited for him in that regard.
Oregon State, Jake Luton went in the sixth round to Jacksonville. I know when you called the Civil War, it was Tristan Gebbia. So rather than focus on the outgoing guy, how about Gebbia? I've been told he might be a little more suited to Jonathan Smith's offense. You got to see him. What's your read on the kind of player he might be looking forward to next season?
Well, you know, I'm really looking. I was, you know, selfishly, I was so bummed about COVID-19 because of the quarterbacks in this conference. So, like, I'm in my office here, and I look to my right, and I've got a list of all the top players in every team and question marks per position group. And the quarterback in this conference is a big question mark at, like, more than half the school.
Yep.
And Oregon State being one of them, of like, what's it going to be like? And if you remember when Tristan Gebbia came, I believe it was like mid-season, he transferred from his previous school, and everybody's talking about he's the next guy. And we anticipated him being the starter last year because we didn't anticipate Jake Luton getting a sixth year. And even if he did, we didn't know if Jake Luton would beat him out, but he did. Jake did miraculous things, and that's why he got drafted, right? He changed his body. He finally got healthy. Had a hell of a year. But as we saw in the Civil War in the game you mentioned, Tristan didn't flinch in that game. Now, like, he didn't thrive in that game. He didn't ball in that game. But he didn't flinch. And that was the biggest stage he's ever played on in his life. And I was on the field with Jonathan Smith before the game. And, you know, he's like, hey, we're probably going to go with Tristan. Like, here we go. You know, like, and he was confident in him. He was excited with him about it. But it's not as though Tristan had, like, 3.5 months of a season to prepare for that game of experiences. So I'm excited for him, man. I do think you're right in terms of the movement stuff. You know, they've got one of the best O-line coaches in the country, in my opinion, and Jim Mihalchik, but they don't have the best offensive line personnel in the country. So you got to have a guy that can make second and third reaction throws, can move in the pocket, and I think it's going to do wonders for them. I'm so excited for them for whenever they get to play because of how creative they've been. You know, think of the quote they use do common things in uncommon ways.
Right.
And that's how they built this roster, and Tristan's at the forefront of that.
A few final thoughts for Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. Back to your neck of the woods. You saw Dorian Thompson-Robinson early in the year, then against Arizona State. I actually thought he would flourish a little more year two with Chip Kelly. He had some moments, some inconsistencies. What was your read about the progress he made and maybe the kind of player he could be moving forward?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of him, and I get why it's hard or it's easy to not be, because of productivity, to your point, is up and down. But I still go back to his narrative. I met him when he was a sophomore in high school, and Tate Martell, who's now since transferred to Miami, and I don't know if he's back at quarterback, but he ended up playing receiver last year. He was the dude. He's the all-time winningest quarterback, never lost a game, and Dorian could have transferred, but he didn't. He played wide out. He was a backup quarterback, and he played as a senior. So when you think about that, and I'll give you a rough number here, for Dorian Thompson-Robinson, heading into college, he played around 300 snaps in his life at quarterback.
Huh.
Jaden Daniels played over 1,000. You know, coming into college, right? These are two guys that played as true freshmen. But so you think of, like, just the reps. And that's why I like, you know, these air raid teams, because guys are getting reps and reps and reps at a younger age. They can come in and play. So Dorian didn't get it, right? So he's literally entering his fourth season in his life as a starting quarterback, you know, as a pseudo young man,
right?
Teenager, young adult. So he's going to keep growing, right? And he did, like, you know, he had moments, he had games, and he did his freshman year, he had moments and he had games. So I think third year under Chip Kelly, Dana Bible, he should take a big step. His offensive line will take a nice step. Quarterback, I like his progression. I like his development. And I think he's got two more years. You know, like I would hate to see him leave early, just based on there's so much in the tank for him that sometimes you don't get to develop in the NFL, but they can develop at UCLA. And I'm really excited for him. I really am. He and that program in year three has always been kind of like a circle year.
Right.
All right, what can they do? I think it's year four because of the amount of transition. I think they lost like 80 guys on the roster since Chip took over and left the program. So it has been a total overhaul. So Dorian's at the center of it, so I'm really looking forward to him.
Let's bang gears. It seems like every Sunday now, the sports world locks down to watch the Bulls documentary, The Last Dance. And I'm trying to do the math, so that would kind of take you through elementary school, middle school, then high school. I know you grew up in a football hotbed, but what kind of trip down memory lane has this documentary been for you?
Oh, man, it's been great. So every Sunday, I think a lot of people can relate to this. You know, well, we didn't have cable, but every Sunday you get NBC because you got like the big, whatever, four channels or whatever it was,
right.
Four or five channels. And NBC would be Marv Albert, Mike Pritello, or Bill Walton, like some combination of those guys. And at like 11:30 in the morning, you know, Eastern time, it would be NBA Inside Stuff. And I'd watch that and then tee up into the game. And what I loved the most was always the warm up. You know, and the intro. So it'd be like, and welcome to the game, I'm Mark Albert, and blah, blah, blah. And that was something for me, even now as a broadcast. I love opens because it would fire me up so much. So to be able to watch those back, and then, of course, to hear every kid in the world dreamt of, like, somebody announcing their name like the announcer does for Michael Jordan, like, it took me back. And then as a competitor now, someone who's been seasoned and had this as a profession, to get an inside look of the type of competitor Michael is, that was really cool. And it has been really cool to hear him talk, you know, to hear him talk about, you know what, Scottie Pippen, he, you know, that was wrong. What he did, that was selfish, you know, when he talked about his injury, or when he talked about Horace Grant, or whether he talked, like, I love those moments because I do think, like, people can be very genuine, like Michael or Coach Carroll, or hopefully, you know, you and myself. We also have this competitive streak that you don't always get to see, and I think we've gotten to see it. And that's been really a joy for me to watch how Michael competed.
You know, I wanted to close with that because what struck me is He's 57 now. These series took place 22 to 29 years ago. So it's not just me. It seems like whether it's the grudge he held against the Pistons, the rivalry with the Knicks, he's as ticked off and has the fiery competitive nature burning now. Seems like the same as he did then.
Yeah, it's really well said. And you think about it, like, you do interviews for a living. You don't go there often, right? Like,
right.
Until you're kind of in it, and then you start thinking about it and going there, and you're like, yeah, dude, like, I loved being in, you know, the shark tank with Scotty and Paxton and whatever. And, like, your juices come out. So I think as we become adults, like, we don't talk about ourselves a lot anyway in terms of life experiences. So when someone tries to unearth them from us and then be at Michael's level, oh, what a joy. And you know, some of my favorite moments, and I just use them as a filmmaker where you show somebody something. I really enjoy that because you get like a natural laugh or, oh man, that's BS or whatever it is. I just think it's really, it's really cool.
Yeah, well, as a lifelong Knicks fan, of course, a part of me wants to curl up in a ball and hide in the corner. But
yeah, totally. No. You and Mike Ambo.
Yeah, well, that's one thing we always talk about and have in common. Folks, he's Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network on Twitter. It's at Yogi Roth. Hey, enjoy those conversations with the coaches, and maybe in a couple weeks I'll hit you up and we'll do an update, buddy.
Yeah, I'd love that, man. Thank you. And tune in. You guys can more than welcome to participate, and then we'll kick it out on the Pac-12 Perspective podcast as well. Every day, every morning, you got a new episode on the Pac-12 Network, so something fun that we're kind of doing. So if you want to hear what the coaches are saying.
Yeah, it's been great, and I always appreciate your time, wishing you and yours health, safety, and sanity, and thanks for joining us. We'll catch up soon.
Amen, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right, take it easy. Hey, thanks a lot, Yogi. Always appreciate your time, man. Always great heartfelt insight and information from Yogi. We'll take a break, be back with more. 95.3 The Score.